Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona, Rebecca, after years and years and episodes, we have been saying it's coming, and now it's here. Tell everybody what we're talking about.
Hi, Mark. Well, the new regulations by DHS, not the draft legislation.
So today was the day, July 24th, 2019, where the new regulations have been posted in the Federal Register. Mona, so we know everyone is looking at these new regulations, aren't they?
Yes, it's being blocked to death right now.
So we're, of course, they're going to talk about it in a few minutes as well, but we want to first get into timing. It doesn't make any sense that USCIS came out with the regulations over Congress's draft legislation.
Right. This is what's really surprising a lot of the industry. Mark, in case you didn't know, I'm sure you do, we have been arguing this. We've been going back and forth for years for one reason. The industry has not been on the same page. This is the first time in the history of EB5 that the entire EB5 industry is on the same page as regards the draft legislation. And we have draft legislation. We are just tweaking it. We're in the process of getting support from the Hill. We have major players supporting us, but people like Lindsey Graham, Senator Cornyn, people in the House, Hakeem Jeffries. There's just so many names. But the point is that why would USCIS or DHS publish regulations literally weeks before the possibility of draft legislation coming out and superseding? It doesn't make sense. The only thing I can think of at this point, Rebecca, is the fact that these regulations are not complete regulations. They're bifurcated, number one. We don't talk about security measures, which is coming up later. There's a lot of issues which is not there. It doesn't address many areas such as reauthorization, concurrent filing. I feel that these regulations are just there to increase the minimum investment amount and fix the TEA.
Exactly. But as we know, USCIS has given us 120 days.
The thing is, 120 days is not necessarily the norm. When regulations are being posted, many times, it's 30 days. 120 days is very generous. It's enough time for people to complete project documents, to get maybe complete their raises. And I think that's what USCIS or DHS had in mind when they put this together, because there are some major issues that we need to address with the fact that the TEA is changing. It's very much the fact that 54% of the current projects will be affected. Maybe USCIS are also trying to avoid what's called skeletal petitions, which we're going to discuss shortly. There's just a lot of issues.
But with so many issues coming up, do we see litigation? Do you think anyone's going to bring out a case?
Well, litigation has been brought out every time we discuss the regs. Somebody says somewhere that, no, we are going to litigate. In my opinion, the regulations are very tight. I don't see litigation being successful here, or even if litigation comes out, I don't see them getting an injunction here. And I feel that the industry right now is very fragile because of the need for more visas, that I don't think they would litigate. Maybe they will. Maybe I'm wrong. But at this point, I don't see litigation.
Mona, Rebecca, if I may, what does it matter? You know, to the typical project developer, to the typical investor, you know, new regulations are coming out. The motivations and the timing may be questionable, but really to typical investor and the typical project developer, does it matter as far as like what their possible litigation success over is all these regulations? Or should we just really worry about the impact of the regulations right now?
Well, yes, it does matter to a lot of projects. As I just stated, 54%, and that's DHS's number, not our number, 54%, that's half, more than half of the current projects will not be able to raise capital because they will be at the 1.8 level. Those projects, and we already know, many regional centers will be going down. So it's basically projects versus the investors. That's really where the impact is. And for many people, 900 may be too much. So a lot of investors who are perhaps collecting in their own project may not be able to afford it for them. There is a rush. But I think that, yes, there is a reason for some regional centers perhaps to think about litigation just to fight the TEA.
Thank you, Mona, for a little bit of that clarification. I know we're going to dive deeper into what this litigation may mean in the future, right?
This is the first of a few podcast recordings. We are very happy to announce that we are going to have Leon Rodriguez. He is going to be a podcast guest, as well as Robert Devine. Robert Devine has just written an excellent piece on what he sees as the regs, as well as other speakers. So there's a lot to discuss. There's a lot of areas. Let's leave the litigation and then what we can do with the regs to the experts. We, Rebecca and I, have a lot more things to discuss.
Okay, fair enough.
So, Mona, for our investors, I think a lot of investors are wondering, should I file now? Or can I wait? Do I have until November 21st, 2019, which is the effective date? What's going on? What should we tell clients?
Okay, here I have total appreciation for USCIS giving the maximum time of 120 days because you cannot rush into your investments. You have to still do your due diligence. I don't think we can stress this enough. Do not just suddenly listen to someone say, I have to be in now. No, take your time. It doesn't make any difference as far as I'm concerned if you file this week, next week, in a month's time. But doing due diligence is very important. When we stated about 54% of projects being affected, what that actually translates to is that there's going to be a financial shortfall. So if in the calculations that we currently see in project documents, and there's going to be a lot of moving of project documents, again, that's a topic for another episode. A lot of the calculations are done on the basis that EB-5 has a lesser interest rate and it's cheaper capital. Now, if you can only raise a smaller percentage of EB-5 or no EB-5, and the rest is coming from an alternative source, that alternative source is likely to be bridge or another financial instrument, which is going to be at a much higher rate. What that basically translates out to is that all the figures will change.
Exactly.
Right. The profits will change, the returns will change, and there is a huge possibility that the investors may not get either A, the rate of interest that is being touted, or B, the return of the capital in the time that they're expecting, or C, even the success of the project. So yes. I think that it's very important to look at each project. I think big projects are uncomfortable looking at projects and seeing where is the EB-5, why are they taking EB-5? Do your due diligence, people.
Yeah, I 100% agree with investors. It's, you know, the team is important, what project you're going into, but also the timing that they're saying November 21st, it does give a lot of our investors a lot of time, but what happens to those who are worried about being stuck in backlog?
I think you can answer that the best of all, Rebecca.
Yeah. What I say, you know, a lot of time, this is what happened back in, you know, like you said, Mark, we've been doing this since 2015. We've had the deadline. Everybody's been coming in and pushing forward. As much as, yes, take your time, get, you know, the right project in, but at the same time, you don't want to get stuck and then get the investment amount higher. And also at the same time, for our Indian investors who are out there listening, and for those any other countries that are in backlog, you also want to make sure that you're not stuck behind others who are coming in and filing at the same time. That's the fine line. What do you choose? Do you choose, is it important for you to go ahead and make the decision that I need to get in first, I need to get under the low amount as soon as possible, or is the project more important? So our investors, you know, you have to look at both points very carefully.
But that also leads to another big issue, which I think a lot of the lawyers are talking about, and that's skeletal filings.
Exactly.
What's skeletal filings?
Okay, so back in 2015, which is when the first time we had the big rush, we saw a bunch of horrible, horribly drafted petitions. The difference between a badly drafted petition and a good drafted petition was years of backlog by USCIS. In fact, when we actually had that event in at the Baruch College in November 2017, remember, Rebecca, when the IPO, I think it was the last time we saw the IPO out. I remember it was, who was it? Was it Jan Lyons, the USCIS advisor?
Yep, for economic department.
Yep. Right. I think he stated that there was such a surge in applications and petitions filed in advance of the December 2015 sunset date that there was the combination of sheer volume and poor quality of the petitions caused the first processing delays. I mean, the real
That's
delays.
Right. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. There was such delays, people just filing with just petitions, barely putting in any documents for source of funds, project documents for SLIM. And of course, you know, they were sending out RFPs and NOID responses where rather than actually reviewing cases that had actual sustenance to it. Because of that, USCIS also came back with a policy memo that was published in July of 2018, but came into effect of September 11th. Where USCIS now have discretion to deny applications without first issuing RFPs or NOIDs. So that's where investors also have to pay attention and make sure that they're not just filing in a rush, that everything has to be filed properly.
Right. And again, because this is, we now have a pressure of a deadline, and from our own experience, especially from petitioners from certain parts of the world, multiple sources are usually the cause of bad filings. Lack of explanations, failure of documents. And we don't know the standard that USCIS are going to use for this memorandum, but we're ready for it. Rebecca, the other big issue, which we saw in 2015 onwards, was filing petitions with only partial capital.
Yes. So we did see a lot of that.
We filed many cases ourselves.
Exactly. Yeah. My opinion is if you do it with your source of funds, with the partial investment amount, is if it's sourced correctly, and you also explain to USCIS, you know, where is the other funds coming from? And we can show that USCIS has accepted.
Well, this is open to discussion. Now, they have accepted in the past and we have had approvals. But when Robert Devine comes on the show, he's going to also explain his point of view because he has a different opinion.
Yes, I'm very curious to hear about his opinion as well. So can't wait for that. But for all our listeners out there, the effective date of November 21st, 2019, USCIS will be accepting petitions based on these current rules, the rules that are here today until that date. So you will be grandfathered in. So that's why we're discussing having this deadline.
But what about TEAs? Because that's what a lot of people are worried about. Are TEAs grandfathered?
If you're filing within before the November 21st, 2019, yes. It's going to be on the date you filed.
Right. But what I have heard, and this came back again because of previous things which have happened, like back in 2015 onwards, there was a discussion at one point that if you file one petition from a project, the TEA, the whole TEA is grandfathered. That is not the case.
No. Yeah. It's per investor. So whenever that investor files the case, that is when the TEA will take effect.
So just to clarify that, if we have an example of a project which is currently in TEA, but under the new rules will not be in a TEA, and it requires 30 investors, and by November 21st, only 20 investors are filed, what about the last 10? What happens to them?
Yeah, the last 10 will go under the new TEA definitions as of November 21st.
And is now a good time to talk about what those investment amounts would be?
That's a very good question, Mark. In fact, I think we should have begun by stating the change in the investment amounts. You know, because there's so many blogs and there's so many things which have been out there, we've automatically assumed that everybody would know.
Yes, but we are the voice on EB5.
Rebecca, would you like to state the changes in the amounts?
Of course. So for those that qualify under a TEA, the increase will go from $500,000 US dollars to $900,000. And the big jump is the non-TEA, which will increase from $1 million to $1.8 million. Now, they have also said in the regulations that adjustments can be made based on inflation starting October of 2025 and will be increasing every 5 years thereafter.
So essentially allowing for easy regulation adjustments based off market growth.
Right. Yeah, it's not just a one-time change.
So in that scenario that you just painted, someone who files before November 21st, who is in a targeted employment area, would only have to invest $500,000. But after November 21st, that would be $900,000. And if that TEA now goes to a non-TEA area, it's no longer a target employment area, that $500,000 then becomes a $1.8 million hurdle.
Yeah. Right. But looking on the bright side, for all the developers who are listening, you won't need 10 investors. You would probably need just two or three investors. And perhaps
that's true.
If we change the
that's true. And yeah. Some other good news here, because we've been covering this in EB5 Investment Voice. We've been here for years, many episodes. Originally, it was the targeted employment area. They've been talking about 1.3, 1.4 million. It's only 900. Now, I say only 900,000, but it's less than what it could have been. So it's not that bad of news.
No, it really isn't. I'm not too upset about it. It really depends on how the TEA is worked out and how the TEA is going to be handled in the future. I will let the other experts speak on this, but to me, my reading of the regulations is that it's quite uncertain because USCIS will have jurisdiction and maybe they will take a while or maybe won't even know until 526s are filed, which would be a total disaster.
Yeah. I know we've interviewed economists on this podcast before, and I'm curious to see how their work will change because target employment areas have always been in the realm of the state. Each individual state could define TEAs however they'd want to. And the federal government would say, all right, well, we acknowledge that you say this is a TEA, so it must be a TEA. Now it's under Department of Homeland Security. The feds are basically coming in and say, no, we will designate targeted employment areas. So that's going to change a lot.
Well, yes, I think Senator Grassley has a lot to do with this, and especially from all the tweets that he had sent out. And to be very fair, it has... On the face of it, it does look very unfair. There was a time, Mark, when 70% of the investors were coming, basically just coming to two or three regional centers in New York City. It was really, I shouldn't just say just New York City, but the big metropolitan areas. So perhaps it was a little unfair.
I hear you. And forgive me, Mona, I wasn't really saying that this is a bad change. I'm just saying it's going to be a big change because there has been a lot of gerrymandering of various census tracts by very smart, knowledgeable people, but in order to meet a certain goal, and that's to make areas a TEA. And now it sounds like a lot of that is going away. Target employment areas, the definition and who designates them as changing. Rebecca, thank you. The investment amounts are changing a lot. Those are probably the two biggest changes.
Well, there's some clarifications in these regs. One of the clarifications, which I'm quite happy about, is the fact that if there's a death of an investor, what happens? Because currently there is a little uncertainty. And in the regulations, it does state that if an investor dies during the prescribed 2-year period of conditional permanent residence, the spouse and the children will be eligible for the removal of conditions. It doesn't say, though, what would happen if they died before the 526 is approved. And so I would like to see a few changes here, you know, clarifying some of these areas. It also, Rebecca, did you see anything in the readings relating to priority date retentions, age outs?
Yep, I was going to follow up with you right after that. They are allowing EB-5 petitioners to retain priority dates, but only under certain circumstances. So it allows some flexibility for those who, like, for instance, let's say something happened where it was revoked because of a material change, or there's something happened where the petitioner would be allowed to refile a petition and retain its earlier priority date. But for any misrepresentation or let's say anything to do with the source of, let's say they've denied on source of funds or anything of that, then of course the priority date will not be retained. But it does help with those who get pretty much denied that was no fault of their own.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of cases about that. Again, Robert Devine is one person who can really speak to troubled projects, which have got nothing to do with the innocent investor.
Yes, but they didn't bring up what they said. It doesn't work at the I-29 stage. So unfortunately, if you're denied at that stage, which is 2 years after you get your conditional green card, you'll have to refile all over again and start from the beginning.
Oh, and what is the consequence of refiling? And that could also be because if the documents are done in a shabby way, or you have a lawyer who really doesn't know what he's doing, what are the consequences of refiling?
Yeah, exactly. Again, you've wasted all that time and would have to go back in the beginning of the queue. So you'd have to go back through the adjudication time with USCIS. And go through all the steps all over again.
And not to mention the higher level of investment.
Yeah, exactly. A higher level of investment. And then those who are in backlog as well will be put behind the queue again.
So another question that we've been asked by investors is, will we get more visa numbers? It's not in these regulations. What we have heard, just floating around, our little birds, once the integrity measures have been put in place, then Congress and USCIS would be more amenable to looking at visa numbers. I would say also that in and of itself, the very fact that the amount has been raised from 5 to 9 would bring down the numbers by, you know, naturally.
Thank you, economists, for teaching us price sensitivity.
Right, right. We don't have any news about backlogs, age outs just yet, but hopefully as soon as we get the news, we will bring it forward. Maybe the draft legislation that everybody's pushing might just go through, and just maybe we'll get all of the answers in that.
Let's see.
You don't sound very confident.
Well, like we said, USCIS came out with these regulations. They pushed them through. USCIS, they had ample time. We had ample time with the draft legislation. Obviously, that didn't come through. So what is to say that maybe Congress just takes this and go with it and then make the changes, like you said, with visa numbers and all that later? So let's see what happens.
Well, Mona and Rebecca, I want to commend you both. A lot of people are going to be saying in the next 180 days, hey, rush in. Don't wait. Now's the time to do your project. You have until November 21st. And I want to applaud you on the advice that you're giving, and that's saying that choosing the appropriate project and the team is crucial. Don't rush in with these skeletal filings. You've talked about before, back in 2015, when the strategy was, hey, just shove your foot in the door. If you get a request for evidence or a notice of intent to deny, then you've got some time to work with that. But you've basically said, passing down the word from USCIS, that they're just going to deny things outright without doing the RFE and NOID steps. So be careful on those very minimal filings and the consequences of these lack of documents. So that's good to know.
Just one more thing, Mark. I really want to caution our listeners again. We are already seeing projects trying to change documents. And we want to really educate our listeners. So we've decided that one or two of our episodes, we're going to educate our listeners on what to expect in PPMs and what to expect in the change of documents. But it's very important, because the change of documents at this stage, you need to know what to look for.
So, Mona, as you mentioned, we've got a couple of guest experts lined up. They'll be on the next couple of episodes. We've got, I know, 4 or 5 more scheduled with some other experts as we reach out and say, hey, how would these changes affect the implementation of the certain aspect of EB-5? But here's my big question. You know, we can only cover so much on the show, and it's general information, not specific legal advice, right? I got that disclaimer at the end for a reason. But what would an investor do? What should a project developer do? What should a regional center do right now if they have questions about EB-5 now and what's going to happen before November 21st and what they can do safely before that date? what should they do?
Do you really need to ask that question?
I do. Because, okay, obviously, listen, if you're a longtime listener of the show, I'm not talking to you, Mona or Rebecca. I'm talking to the person listening. If you're a longtime listener of the show, you know it's not an infomercial. We very rarely say, call us and talk to us about your legal needs. Now's the time to do that. Forgive me if it sounds like an infomercial, but there's a lot changing.
You know, we're laughing, but seriously, it is the best time. Like, if you have any questions regarding these regulations, you should just contact us, let us know. We can guide you through it. We can tell you what's going to happen. We can discuss your project documents, or we can discuss your source of funds. We can tell you, you know, a lot of our clients come to us with questions about their kids and age out and everything. So we'll be able to help guide everyone through this.
And with regards to the developers, for our developer listeners, I would like to put a word of caution in. Do look at alternative means of financing. We do have 120 days. There's a lot of rush out there. And, you know, do look at certain ways of marketing. There are, right now, I know there are roadshows going on everywhere. And there will be a mad rush to get investors in. And there will be this hope that, oh, I will be able to fill my project up. But just in case, for the safety of your current investors, alternative source of capital is a good thing. Secondly, look carefully at what you're throwing your money at with regards to marketing. There's smart marketing and there's not so smart marketing. Perhaps, Mark, we should have an episode on smart marketing.
I didn't agree before.
Finally, a topic maybe I can talk about.
I think you're pretty knowledgeable now.
Yeah. See, that's one of the drawbacks of being the co-host on this show is I try to listen as someone that's just a casual listener to the show. But I've been picking up a lot in the 80 some episodes we've been doing this. And for the person that's listening to this right now, if you think some of these changes will affect your near-term plans and perhaps long-term plans, I encourage you to reach out to Mona and Rebecca, book a consult, see what they can do for you. See, you know, what the specifics of the situation are and what could be done. That being said, we've got about 80 episodes in the backlog. You can listen to various topics. We have a half a dozen coming up in the next 2 months where we'll dive into some of these changes in various areas. But again, that's general information, not specific legal advice. Specific legal advice, contact Mona and Rebecca, and that contact number and the email, it's embedded right there in the podcast episode. Just click on the description. And as I'm saying this right now, you may not want to touch your podcast player of choice. So let me just go ahead and give you that phone number. It is 212-233-7473. That's Mona Shaw and Associates. Well, Mona and Rebecca, I want to thank you this evening. I know this was a very short notice podcast because things changed very rapidly. Mona, I realize you're in the New York office right now and the studio isn't quite set up the way we usually do it, but thank you for accommodating us. And Rebecca, you're all the way out in London right now. It's almost midnight and this episode is going to drop in a couple of hours. So thank you so much for accommodating me and for the EB5 Investment Voice listeners.
Thank you, Mark.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw and Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshawlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.